is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The headline, China's Xi Jinping and Russia's Vladimir Putin to strengthen economic political ties. In the three-day meeting between the two imperial leaders of the world island, Eurasia, the expectation is no peace is at hand, but peace is much in the press releases. And to interpret the peace talk in Moscow, and then prior to this, the peace talk in Beijing, in Tehran, and Riyadh, I welcome Mary Kissel. She is the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, traveling all these capitals and all this land in the Trump administration. And now here we are, a picture of Xi Jinping, the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, and Vladimir Putin, former member of state security, now the president of the Russian Federation, standing together, talking peace, and no sight of the United States of America. That's in Moscow. Heretofore, Mary has written, peace talk between Tehran and Riyadh, brokered, we're told, by the Chinese Communist Party leader, Xi Jinping. Mary, it is a strange day to talk peace and mention Russia and China at the same time, to talk peace and mention Tehran and Riyadh in the same sentence. What do you make first of the Xi Jinping announcement that he has brokered a peace between sworn enemies who have battered each other for decades? That would be the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the Islamic Republic of Iran. Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening to you, John. It's always a pleasure to be with you. I think it's extraordinary to see Xi Jinping enter the world stage and achieve what he's achieved, which is, as you rightly say, a rapprochement between enemies. But as Lord Palmerston once noted, nations have no eternal allies or perpetual enemies. They have interests. And if there's one thing that Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin have in common, it is the ability and the will to move into strategic and diplomatic voids. And that's exactly what Xi Jinping is doing in the Middle East. And it's exactly what Vladimir Putin has done in the past in areas like Syria and then recently in Ukraine. The Mideast Agreement is significant, John, because it provides a stability in a part of the world that China needs. China is energy poor. Saudi Arabia is energy rich, as are the Gulf nations. And so it's no coincidence that you saw Xi Jinping in December make a major trip to see the Gulf Cooperation Council and selected African nations. And as a result, now we've learned of that those visits and that diplomacy. He secured what can only be termed a major diplomatic victory for Beijing with the rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and a major diplomatic defeat for the United States, which has historically, for decades, been the reigning superpower in the region. I think that reign is waning because Washington made a decision under this president to make Saudi Arabia, and I'll quote the president, a, quote, pariah. And so I think when Xi Jinping saw that, he said, there's an opening here and China will step into it. And he has.
Xi Jinping proposed the Global Security Initiative. However, you've presented correctly to my measure. What's in it for China is energy. Anything else, Mary? Is he promoting China as an arbiter for all of the disputes of the world island? Everybody?
Oh, this is a victory that goes far beyond the provision of energy, John. Anything that divides the United States from its friends and partners anywhere in the world is a victory for China, which has set about to weaken the free world and its alliances. Also, it is a major propaganda victory for Xi that he can use at home. He is deeply unpopular among the Chinese people. It's impossible to know just how unpopular because, of course, it's not a free nation. It's a totalitarian state. But in the few instances where Chinese people can freely express themselves, like, for instance, before the total obliteration of free Hong Kong, You saw very clearly just how unhappy they were with his rule. And you can also discern that, of course, by the capital flight from China. Whenever the spigots open, of course, the Chinese people rush to get their money out and their children out to foreign universities if they can manage it. So it's a victory on the economic front. It's a victory on the strategic front for weakening alliances, and it's a major propaganda victory also for Xi.
You mentioned the conflict between the Biden administration and the kingdom. What does Iran get from this apparent sitting down with a peace pipe with an enemy? Does Iran get an advantage anywhere, Mary?
Oh, certainly. Anything that improves the relationship with Saudi Arabia takes a problem off of Tehran's plate. And Tehran has a lot of problems. You've seen street protests now against the regime for months. And I'm frankly surprised that they don't receive more attention in the West. It takes an enormous amount of courage for the Iranian people to get out and, you know, rip off their veils and, you know, wave them around in protest what can only be described as a barbarous regime. And so I think Tehran would like to focus its attention on its own internal stability. Also, by befriending China, Iran gets an economic partner that it also needs, because, of course, Iran remains under economic sanctions for its illegal nuclear and ballistic missile development activities. And you're seeing a third nation added to this toxic duo in the form of Russia, where Iran is providing Russia with drones for the fight in Ukraine, and energy, and China is buying Russian energy. So it's a nice little trio there. These are, fairly populous nations, obviously not as populous as China, without a lot of friends. So if they get together, there are many ways in which they can cooperate to further their shared interests. And their shared interests are very clear. The perpetuation of these autocratic, brutal regimes and the creation of a market that isn't so dependent on the unfriendly West.
We go to Moscow with the peacemakers. This, I'm told by the Wall Street Journal, is the 40th meeting between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin. Again, peace is the reference point, peace between Moscow and Kyiv. At least the Chinese present the possibility on the basis of a phone call that hasn't happened to my knowledge between Xi Jinping and President Zelensky of Ukraine. Mary, the peacemaking between Moscow and Ukraine seems a bridge too far. However, what does China get from this? Good feelings, more than that, because China's a very practical and needy state.
Well, Vladimir Zelensky is not involved in the summit between Xi and Putin, nor do I think he wants to be. Xi Jinping, by using CCP propaganda to promote this fiction that he's a peacemaker, achieve several things with this visit. First of all, he probably is going to get some sort of energy arrangement with Russia that will be a deliverable, like the deliverable that he got from the Iran-Saudi rapprochement. That's important. So, it signals that when Chinese diplomats go places, they actually get something done rather than just talk. But secondly, when Xi talks of, quote unquote, peace in Ukraine, what he's really saying is, we know that that's not an achievable thing as Putin's forces keep, slaughtering innocent Ukrainians and committing war crimes. But, I'll mouth the word and hope to fool some, naive policymakers in Europe and potentially in the United States. And even if I don't, just the prospect of peace will force Volodymyr Zelensky to take my phone call because he can't be seen as refusing to talk. He can't be seen as unreasonable for his own domestic political reasons. So it prolongs the conflict. That is helpful to China because a prolonged conflict in Ukraine, draws down the West's ammunition and supplies and diverts the West's attention away from what Beijing is doing in the Asia-Pacific region. So it's sorry to kind of weave together all of these strings, John, but it's a somewhat complicated picture because it's not just about the Xi-Putin visit and those bilateral relations. It has repercussions in Ukraine for the United States and for Europe as well.
Last week, we read the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, warned about this conversation between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin. He called it a stalling tactic. The quote, "The world should not be fooled by any tactical move by Russia, supported by China or any other country, to freeze the war on its own terms. Calling for a ceasefire that does not include the removal of Russian forces from Ukrainian territory would effectively be supporting the ratification of Russian conquest." Mary, I'm interested, because of your wide experience, how does Europe hear this? How does the Global South hear this? We'll start with Europe.
Well, I think Secretary Blinken is accurate in his description, as he has been for months. The State Department, in fact, has been excellent at describing what's going on. What they haven't been so good at is devising diplomatic strategies to help Ukraine win the war and win it quickly. If ever there were a moment for creative diplomacy, it would be right now to scour the world and our friends and partners for the kinds of weaponry and airplanes and tanks and whatever the heck else the Ukrainians need and get it to them as quickly as possible. So, you know, I commend him for the transparency. But at the end of the day, if he doesn't deliver, then it's not a useful exercise.
And the conversation in Moscow, it's not concluded yet. We'll find out more. The State Department had been very clear these last weeks that China must not, unacceptable to transfer lethal aid to Russia. And that is unclear at this moment. It's left hanging. We're going to turn to what is to be done. There are positives happening at the same time of the negatives of the imperial powers cutting up the world island. We're headed to Kyiv next, where the prime minister of Japan has recently arrived, the final of the G7 to visit Kyiv in wartime. Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. I'm John Batchelor.